I'm Phil C.
And I'm Lynn.
And together,
we're Roman Oz.
Real interviews.
With real people.
On location.
With a great mix of Aussie music.
As requested by the people we interview.
Follow us on Facebook.
Or check us out, romanoz.com.au.
So, Phil, what's on the show this week?
Well, Lynn, we're still in Narromine.
Yes, we are.
And I'm chatting with Peter Kirath.
Yes, at the Narromine Aviation Museum.
You've got it. There was so much to talk about, we couldn't possibly fit him over one program.
No, I know. He's a wealth of information.
Absolutely. And doesn't he love his old music?
Yes, he does.
Oh, Peter. Oh. You've set me a challenge, my man. He asked me for the Road to Gundagai, which
yes.
we played last week.
Yes.
And this week, he said, I'd love to hear Once a Jolly Swagman.
Mm.
But he asked me for the very first recording. Now, I don't think...
That's a task.
That was a task. Now, I don't think there's one that goes back any further than this. I think this is 1929.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And it's a 78, Peter. It's going to...
It's got crackles.
It's got crackles and pops. And we're not talking about Kellogg's cornflakes here. We're talking about the original recording that was done on 78.
Mm.
So it's going to be interesting for our listeners because a lot of them wouldn't even know what a 78 was.
No, they wouldn't. They wouldn't know what a record was.
But, of course, Peace would because they would have had 78s back in his day. So we've got him the original recording. Now, apart from that, we've also got...
Jeff Diath, and he's going through GVM upgrades.
He's going to talk us through GVM upgrades because before you should get a GVM upgrade, listeners, you really should find out what your needs are.
Yes.
Because, you know, a GVM upgrade, if you just go and get one straight off the shelf, it may not actually suit your needs.
No.
So you really need to find out what your needs are before you go out and get a GVM upgrade. Mm. Because it is an expensive add-on, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
Now, straight after that, we're in Whitecliffs.
We are in Whitecliffs, yes. Mm-hmm. We took the detour and you're chatting to Doug Torpy.
I am indeed. Now, Doug Torpy makes things out of railway dogs.
Yes, and that's not the woof woof.
No, a railway dog is not a dog that sleeps on the railway tracks. It's in fact the pins that hold down the sleepers on the railway lines. And what Doug does is he makes all sorts of garden ornaments.
Yes, he does.
Out of railway dogs.
Fascinating.
Now, I call him a sculptor, but he just says he's just retired and he's just tinkering and mucking around. So listen, apart from all of this, listeners, we've also got a great selection of music
as requested by the people we interview.
So what do you reckon, Lynn? On with the show.
Hello, listeners. Phil C. here from Roaming Oz. Now, I'm going to be talking with Peter again, Peter Kirath. He's the chairman of the Narromine Aviation Museum. You might recall he was on the program last week and so much wonderful information. We decided to do another call in here and we're going to chat with him again. How are you today, Peter?
Again, I'm still here, mate. It was my birthday yesterday.
It was? You're still standing? And how young are you?
83
years young, listeners, okay? Yeah. And he looks fabulous and he's a wealth of knowledge. So what are you going to tell us about this week, Peter?
Well, I just thought we could start with the Elementary Flying Training School.
Okay.
Again, just it was very important. Mm-hmm. Probably the biggest elementary flying training school in Australia. There were 12 altogether.
Right.
The first four were in Sydney, Melbourne, Adelaide and Brisbane and then Narromine.
Okay.
So it was set up in May, or it opened in May of 1940 and they trained 2,850 pilots here.
Mm-hmm.
They were here for 4 years and as I mentioned earlier, we've been through all their records and so on and hopefully we're going to get that up on a TV screen when we can get somebody that can handle that sort of technology.
Right.
But 618 Squadron here was very important. It was a top secret squadron.
Yes.
So all the pilots and navigators and staff were specially selected in England. It was set up to attack the Tirpitz, which was in a fjord in southern Norway. The problem they had... Yeah, most people will remember 617 Squadron, the Dambusters.
Yes, I remember that.
Now, 618 Squadron was set up to do the similar thing, the bouncing bombs, but to attack the Tirpitz, which was in a fjord in Norway. The Lancasters couldn't get at it.
Okay.
And so Barnes Wallace said, well, look, that's okay. We'll get the mosquitoes to do that. Mm-hmm. The problem is the mosquitoes were doing 120 miles an hour faster than the Lancasters, which meant that the store, when it hit the water, was doing 350 miles an hour, which was like dropping the store on concrete. And so it took them several months, 10 months probably, to really resolve that problem.
Mm-hmm.
But by then the Germans had moved the battleship up to northern Norway to interfere with the North Sea fleets that were going to Murmansk, and that was out of the range of the mosquitoes.
Okay.
And it was subsequently 617 Squadron solved that problem.
Yes.
So they put the mosquitoes on two aircraft carriers, the Fencer and the Striker. They sent them out to Fisherman's Bend in Melbourne, serviced them, and flew them straight to Narromine.
Okay.
And here they were flying at low altitudes, 400 miles an hour at 60 feet. I've had a lot of the old local blokes used to tell me that often the mosquitoes would come back in and they'd have leaves in their radiators and things like that. So you think, ooh.
Getting a bit close to the ground.
My word.
Yes.
But I think what they were doing was getting used to the atmospheric conditions here, which were quite different to in Britain.
Mm-hmm.
But then, as I mentioned, the Americans dropped the atomic bombs in early August and all bets were off. They wound the squadron up in September. All the fellows went back to England, and as I mentioned, they had the sale in... Well, they offered them to the Australian government, but the Australian government said, no, well, we're into jet aircraft, vampires, meteors and that sort of thing. We're not taking a wooden frame plane, so thank you very much.
Okay.
So, as I mentioned, they sold them off £75 for a... And everything in those days was rationed. I mean, like fuel, clothing, all sorts of food. Couldn't buy any nuts and bolts or anything of that nature. So if you got a piece of equipment with all that stuff on it, or a lot of stuff on it, certainly that's the reason the farmers bought them.
That's right.
And but, as I mentioned, they also had 250 gallons of fuel in them.
Fuel, as we mentioned
and
last week. Yeah,
so that was... That was a big thing. So, but anyway, so that was just a little bit of a story on 618 Squadron. As I mentioned, they were all sworn under the Official Secrets Act, the penalty of which could have been death if they talked about. So nobody in the town really knew what they were doing. They'd go in and have a few beers and, you know, they'd be questioned, but they'd just change the subject. So that's just an interesting little story. This is quite an interesting story here too. We had a chap ring me from Tamworth and said he had this stained glass. Piece that had come out of a hotel in Mascot. And in 1988, they pulled this hotel down.
Okay.
And this was at the back of the
hotel
in the main bar. And he said to the boss, "What are you going to do with that?" And he said, "Oh, well, we'll put it out the tip." And he said, "No, I'll come in on the weekend and pull it down." And he kept it for 30-odd years.
Wow.
And then, for some reason, rang me to see if we wanted it. And
yes.
I said, well, we'd be interested, because what happened was that Howard Bowden Fletcher, a local bloke, Amy Johnson was the first woman to fly between England and Australia and landed in Darwin in 1930.
Mm-hmm.
And Howard Bowden Fletcher sent her a telegram inviting her to call in at Narromine on the way to Sydney.
Okay.
And anyway, she said, yes, well, that's, I can do that. But she crashed the plane in Brisbane and put it all off. But nevertheless, they made her the first life member of the Narromine Aero Club.
Okay.
And so Yes.
So this LED light window, that's her and her plane.
That's right. That's right. And so anyway, we thought, oh, well, I'd say we had to get it restored, all the frame and so on has been restored, and then we had this nice Australian redwood frame, so it cost us a lot of money, the lighting and so on, but it's come up
fabulous.
Very well. And there's a little bit of a dark corner, so it was an ideal place to put it, really.
Absolutely.
So,
fabulous.
So, yes, although she had a bit of a catastrophic end in London, but we don't need, to go into that.
Yes.
So, so that was that. Then we've got the Aero Club display here. That is all new.
Okay.
We have the pre-war section and the post-war section.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that display's come up really well. As I mentioned, the Narromine Aero Club was set up in September of 1929,
mm-hmm.
and still there. So we think, again, that it's probably one of the oldest, if not the oldest, in regional Australia. I mean, Point Cook and Royal Newcastle and a few are just a bit older, but we think in this area... I'll just flick that. So we've got these timelines here. This is the post-war timeline.
Right.
And that gives... we go through each year and just put... what happened. We've got we've got the pre-war one and the wartime one.
Okay.
So people can just read there and see exactly what went on during that post-war era.
Post-World War II, yes.
Yeah. So this is the old beacon that was out here, and it is an international beacon. It does go round. And it's blue and white, which indicates that it was an international beacon, and because this was the alternate to Mascot for many years.
Okay.
So, and it was on the tower out there. So now we've had a little tower and put it in here. So, and then we've got just a little display on the right flyer. This is the model that. The Sydney University Aeronautical Group made that first.
Yes.
And then they proved that the design was right. They had a battery and an electric motor in it, and it flew well. So then they went on and designed this based on that. So because when Eric Hayden was trying to get plans for it, he was in touch with the US, and really is all they had is a few sketches like that, which I think it was very much monkey see, monkey do.
Yes. Mm. Okay.
And so then we have a little section here on the gliding with the big banner of the World Junior Championships that were in 1915, I mentioned earlier. We have the World Open Gliding Championships here next year.
Okay.
So we'll probably get quite a few out here this year because, again, they like to practice in these conditions.
Fabulous.
I was talking to a couple of the young Dutch blokes when they were out here in 15. We had there was a do in town for them, and I said, how have you found the conditions here? And they said, oh, I've never seen anything like this. And I said, well, what do you get in Denmark? And they said, oh, we could get up to 5,000 or 6,000 feet, and you can see probably 8 or 9 kilometres. And I said, well, what do you get out here? And he said, today we were up to 16,000 feet.
Oh, wow.
And we could see 135 kilometres.
So double the distance and 10 times the view.
Well, it was about 3 years ago. We had I think eight fellows. No, go away. We had eight fellows do over 1,000 kilometres in a day in a glider,
right.
And one fellow did 1,120 in a day in a glider.
Wow!
No power.
No power.
Just relying on the thermals.
Relying on the thermals.
So then we've got a little workshop here. We had all this material in our hut, and it was taking up a lot of room and so on and so forth. And so we decided to build a little workshop out here and just move all the stuff into that. So, and we take bits and pieces out of it occasionally and put in.
Okay.
And this is a MiG 15 engine. We had a chap here many years ago who had a MiG 15. I think he got it from Poland and you could go for a trip in it if you were game.
Okay.
They used to burn a lot of fuel, I think 3,000 litres an hour, so to go up for 40 minutes was about $1,800. So, but,
okay.
And then we've got another Rolls-Royce Merlin engine there,
mm-hmm.
and it's we have two of those, and this one is more complete. It's still got the mounts and all that sort of thing on it, but it's got the four-bladed prop on it.
Okay.
And that is very, very rare for a Mosquito. So, and then this is just the undercarriage of a Mosquito there. So, and these are interesting old things. We had quite a few of these around here. They were put in during the war. The council started to pull them out, and I said, "What are you going to do with those?" The fire hydrants.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, "Oh, tip." And I said, "No, museum."
Okay.
So we had them re-powder coated and cleaned up, and the chap did some work on it. History, they were built in Melbourne between 1920 and 1929.
Right.
But they were made for Victoria, the ACT and the military. And so that's we have two of those here, and they're really come up quite well. So we have the big screen there, where you can see the Wright Flyer flying. We are just having a little bit of trouble with the projector at the moment, but we're going to replace that, and that'll bring it all back up to new. So you just have to touch the screen there like that,
okay.
And it will come up showing you the Wright Flyer flying. Oh, that's this plane here.
Yes.
So, but as I say, we'll do a lot better than that. We're getting a new laser projector up there, so hopefully we'll get that up in the next few weeks. So, yeah.
Fabulous stuff.
So just the other thing over here is, that we have descriptions of some of the most famous blokes that have been here, like Henry Wigley, like Alan Cobham, Francis Chichester, first bloke to sail around the world, Ross Smith and the crew, Charles Kingsford Smith, Col Pay, Ingo Renner, all these people have been to Narromine. And so we've got a little description there, some photos and just what they were here for. We've got Chuck Yeager just around here, Buzz Aldrin, should I say, around here. Chuck Yeager was here, and he's the first bloke to break the sound barrier in the world. I think he did it in the US in 1947, so came out to Narromine.
You've had some very famous people out here.
Yes, indeed.
So who'd be the most famous? I guess Buzz?
Yes, well, Buzz Aldrin. It'd have to be him, although fair dinkum, a lot of those other blokes are pretty well
known in their own field, of course.
Definitely. Yeah. And of course, they're much earlier than him.
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
I mean, some of them are out here in the 20s and 30s. So,
mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So, all right.
Anyway.
Well, yeah. I think we've just about covered it. And it's a very quick overview.
Yes.
So for anybody who is interested in aviation, definitely they should call into the museum.
I think we'd welcome them here. It's good to get plenty of people through. The more we can get through, we have quite a few other things to do.
Mm-hmm.
We want to put a memorial wall out the front with all the 2,850 names on it, with a cross with the ones that didn't come back.
Didn't return, yeah.
So that's quite a big project, which I think this is a very important project. It'll be the only one in the 12 elementary flying trains that would have a memorial wall like that. So then, hopefully, you know, we'll, next week or two, we'll get the Jabiroo up, and but you get three or four jobs done, and another six or eight jump up.
Yes. But you're going to get there, I can tell. So, yeah, look, Peter, 83 years young, you're going to get that done.
Yeah.
You're going to get all these things done before you're ready to soar amongst the clouds.
Yes, well, you've got to be persistent. That's the problem.
Okay.
Quality, it's got to be good quality.
Yep.
And but if it needs to be done, you've got to do it.
All right. Well, we're going to now wind this one up, my friend. If anything else comes up, though, in the future, please get in touch with me.
Yeah.
All right, Peter, well, we're going to wind this up. Right, Peter Kirath, listeners, he's the chairman of the Narromine Aviation Museum. I'm going to play you another song, Waltzing Matilda. So,
All right. Well,
thank you so much for your time, Peter.
That's a pleasure, right.
All right, listeners, we'll be back with more Roaming Oz straight after this. Oh, hello, listeners. Welcome back. My name is Phil C. If you've just joined us, and this is Roaming Oz. And today on the program, one of our regulars, Mr. Jeff Diaf from Checkweight. How are you going today, Jeff?
I'm great, Phil. Yourself?
Mate, couldn't be better. Could not be better, I've got to tell you. All's great in my world. And you guys, wow, you're booked out forever, aren't you? Your business is going crazy.
It is. It's been awesome since the Caravan Camping Show in February when we met.
Yes.
So we've been very, very busy. And I am having a break. But that break is because I'm having a knee total knee replacement.
Oh,
so it's not a holiday. It'll be a knee replacement.
Yep.
Still happy to talk to you through those the weeks where I'll be off.
Fabulous. Fabulous. Well, I know my listeners will be thinking about you. Knee surgery is not a fun experience, so make sure you do all the doctors tell you take it easy, okay?
Yeah, doing the pre-op exercises already.
Yep. Fabulous, fabulous. All right, mate. Well, that aside, what are we going to talk about today? What's your topic for today?
I thought we'd talk about GVM upgrades. It's something that on all the forums, a lot of people do talk about.
Okay.
You know, because we're talking about weight and being overweight. So a lot of people think the first thing they can do is oh, look, I'll just get a GVM upgrade and it'll be okay.
Right.
One of the things that we've found at Checkweight, though, is that not all GVM upgrades are equal.
Okay.
So I suppose, first of all, we should clarify what GVM is. So that's gross vehicle mass.
Okay.
And we're talking about the actual vehicle.
Okay.
If you don't know all the acronyms, you can drop onto checkweight.com.au. We have a button up the top right called Free Report.
Right.
And if you put your email address in there, it'll automatically send you an explanation of all the caravan weight and vehicle weight acronyms.
Fabulous.
Okay. So what do we see at Checkweight is a lot of people who are getting a GVM upgrade or have already got a GVM upgrade, and they don't really understand what they're getting. And when you're spending, you know, $4,000 or $5,000 on a GVM upgrade, you want to make sure that you get your value for money.
Right.
And one of the things that people think, and when we're explaining the weights, I always say GVM is a limit, not a goal.
Okay.
And yeah, a lot of people go, oh, well, you know, I've got a Land Cruiser, I can load it up to 3350 because that's the GVM, that's the gross vehicle mass.
Right.
But it's only one of the limits. And when you load a vehicle to its maximum, it's very difficult to spread the weight between the rear and the front axle so that it's shared evenly.
Right.
So what happens in a lot of vehicles is you end up exceeding your rear axle limit because the vehicle's at its maximum weight.
Right.
Does that make a bit of sense?
It does. It does indeed. And when you think about it, most of the weight, I guess, I know with me, for example, I've had a GVM upgrade because in the back of my vehicle, I've got the fridge, I've got the slide, I've got the drawers, I've got the drawers full of gear. So, yes, I understand. You've got to try and balance the weight out between the front and the rear axles, not just think, oh, well, I can just throw an extra 600 kilos in here and then all of a sudden you're way over your rear axle.
I think we had that conversation a few weeks ago that you did. You ticked every one of the five things that make a vehicle overweight.
Yes, I did indeed. I did indeed. And so, I did say that when I get my new caravan, which is currently being built, before I take it out on the road, you and I might do a video or something for the website, you know, and you can weigh my vehicle and we'll do it all for the viewers and the listeners so they get a real clear picture and understanding of. Just because you have a GVM upgrade doesn't mean you're bulletproof.
Yeah. Well, if you like, I'll give you a few examples, and these are real life examples of vehicles I've weighed.
Right.
We use a Land Cruiser a lot as an example, and I'd like to reiterate, I'm not putting down Land Cruisers by any means.
Okay.
It's just the number one vehicle that I weigh.
Okay.
Number two vehicle is a Ranger, and probably after that we've got sort of D-Maxes and BT-50s and other things.
Okay.
So with a standard Land Cruiser 200, because I haven't weighed any 300s yet, they have a rear axle, gross axle weight rating of 1950 and a front axle of 1700.
Okay.
Okay. And I know we're going to give you a lot of figures, but, you know, bear with us.
Yep.
And you have a GVM of 3350.
Right.
So the first thing you notice is if you add 1950 and 1700,
yep.
It adds up to 3650.
Right.
So that's 300 kilos more than what your GVM is.
Right.
Okay. So the first upgrade when you go to an engineer, they'll say, oh, yeah, I can upgrade your vehicle. We'll give you 3650.
Right.
But when you drive back out, you find that your rear axle and your front axle limits are the same.
Okay.
So they've given you 300 kilos more potential payload.
Right.
But you can't actually put it anywhere because if you're at the limit on your rear axle, you're at the limit anyway.
Right.
Okay. So then the next upgrade that you'll get is a 3800 on a Land Cruiser.
Mm-hmm.
And you go, well, 3800, I mean, that's 450 kilos more than what I had.
Right.
So that's just a new beaut, you know, we can put 450 kilos more in.
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't work that way.
No.
So when you get the engineer certificate, they'll give you a rear axle weighting of 2000 and a front axle of 1800, which adds up to 3800.
Right.
So you can see where I'm going
here.
They've only actually given you 50 kilos more on your rear axle than what you had at standard.
Wow. Okay.
So that means basically you can put 50 kilos more in the back, or only about 75 kilos on the 25 30 kilos on the turbo because that equates to 1.5 times on your rear axle.
Mm-hmm.
So we've weighed a lot of Land Cruisers that have had, they've done the right thing. They've upgraded the GVM to be legal. And then they find out that they're over their rear axle by 100, 200, in some cases even 300 kilos. Because, as you said, that's where the drawers, the fridge, and yes, the tow ball download comes from.
Yes. So how do you go about that? What do? You surely you don't have to get a new rear axle. How do you go about this?
Well, there is 4-ton rear GVM upgrades, and you know, I'm not an engineer, so you need to talk to your engineer or the suspension place about it. But okay, then they start changing brakes and axles and things like that to be able to cope with the weight.
Right.
But when you're looking at getting a GVM upgrade, my suggestion is don't get an off-the-shelf upgrade. Just go to the engineer and say, well, I've got this caravan, I've got this download, so maybe, you know, get a mobile weigher like Chet Weight or somebody else to give you that weight prior to getting a GVM upgrade so you know how much that you need on your rear axle. Because if your rear axle is weighing 2150 now, there's no point getting a 2000 upgrade on it. And, you know, when we weigh at Chet Weight, we advise you on how you may be able to move weight off the rear axle, you know, get rid of the drawers or, you know, move some stuff forward right, to be able to reduce your rear axle weight.
Wow.
So, yeah. So just be careful that, you know, you're getting an upgrade that's going to suit your circumstances and it's just not an off-the-shelf upgrade.
So when you say off-the-shelf, we're talking about the without naming companies, it's just a case of walking in and saying, I want to get a GVM upgrade, and they just put new springs and shocks on there, send you off to the engineer who spends 5 minutes underneath it and charges you $2,500 for him to write a certificate out.
That's right. So, yeah, they've got package A, B, or C, and you just pick package A.
Okay.
Yeah, or B, and that may not be suitable for your circumstances. And when you're spending that sort of money, you want to make sure that you're getting the right upgrade for your circumstances.
Yep.
Yeah, because the next guy who doesn't have the fridge and the drawers and everything in the back may not need that extra upgrade.
Mm. Yep. You're talking about if you sell the vehicle on.
Yeah. Oh, well, yeah. Or, you know, the person, you know, your mate who doesn't have your drawers in the fridge in the back of the cruiser, he won't need as much axle weight as what you would need.
Okay.
Okay. The other thing to watch with the GVM upgrade, that it doesn't necessarily mean that you have an increased towing capacity or increases your GVM, or gross combination mass.
Right.
So when you get a GVM upgrade, and then for the vehicle can be heavier, the result of that is if you don't get a GVM upgrade, is that your towing capacity is reduced, because if your vehicle is heavier, and we've said before, the GVM is the total of the vehicle and the GVM of the caravan.
Yes.
Well, then the heavier the vehicle, the lighter the caravan must be.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, you're going to exceed your gross combination.
Wow, yeah.
So it's just something to be very, very wary of.
And I think it is such a scary area for a lot of people that don't understand it. They just kind of put their head in the sand and prey on ignorance and hope that if something happens, they can just, you know, say, but I've got this piece of paper here that says this, you know, because when you get a GVM upgrade, I've spoken to a lot of people that have had GVM upgrades. And they don't even mention, as a customer that I'm talking to, somebody who's had it done, they don't mention rear axle. They don't mention front axle. They just go, oh, yeah, I've had my vehicle upgraded by 600 kilograms. So, yeah, I'm fine. I can tow anything. When, in fact, they could be in no better position.
Yeah, and that's what happens to a lot. I mean, you know, I've weighed a Land Cruiser a few months ago now, and he had a 3.8 upgrade, and he was, I'd weighed him twice actually, so weighed him, you know, about 18 months ago, and he was slightly over his GVM. And so when he got the GVM upgrade, he thought, well, now I can put all this stuff on it.
Yes.
So the vehicle was flat on 3,800.
Wow, okay.
But he was like 230 kilos over on his rear axle. So, you know, that just means you just can't put all that weight in because it's just, as I said before, impossible to distribute it that you've got 1,800 on the front and 2,000 on the back. It's it's impossible to distribute it that way. Yeah.
There's nothing really you can put on the front to distribute the weight, is there? I mean, it's not like you got a big boot there in the front where you can share the load. I mean, the front of the car is the front of the car. There's an engine, and if you put a bull bar and a winch on there, that's only going to add more weight to the front axle. But it's not taking anything off what you're putting in the rear, is it? Really? No.
Well, it does. I mean, when you put a bull bar and a winch and everything on the front, it helps with that front axle weight. And I suppose that's one of the things. When we're exceeding our rear axle weight, the real problem is, to me, is that your front axle is being light.
Yes.
So that means you've got less steering, less front wheel braking.
Yes, yes.
Especially in wet conditions or, you know, windy conditions. I mean, I weighed a guy only last week and he said, you know, coming into the big roundabout just down the road, he said, there's a B double in the other lane and I was turning right. He started to move over on me a bit as I'm coming around the roundabout. And it wasn't raining at the time, but there'd been a shower that morning.
Yes.
And he said, I just touched the brakes and the front wheels locked up as he's going around the roundabout.
Wow.
You know, because the weight distribution and he was over on his rear axle.
Wow.
So being over on the rear axle, it's probably not going to break. Well, today or tomorrow, but it may in a year or two.
Mm-hmm.
But it's the lack of weight on the front axle that, to me, is the issue.
Yep.
And, you know, in your manual, you'll have a maximum weight that you're allowed.
Mm.
But there's no minimum weight or recommended minimum weight on the front axle.
Okay.
I mean, that'd be something I won't hold my breath. But it's something that I would actually like to see in manuals. You know, what's the minimum weight that should be on your front axle?
Mm-hmm.
Because I think that would be quite scary for a lot of people.
Yes, indeed. Oh, goodness me. Okay. So is there anything more we should you should be telling our listeners about GVM upgrade, Jeff?
Oh, well, just a couple of quick things. And I think, over the last few months, we've seen, massive increases in fuel. And
yes.
One of the things that people, weight's the enemy. So I actually think sometimes instead of going for GVM upgrades, get rid of the weight.
Okay.
The more weight we're carrying, the more fuel we're going to use, the more stress on the vehicle, on the drivetrain. So the reliability of the vehicle long term is going to be compromised.
Yes.
And you're going to use more fuel.
Of course.
So, and as fuel prices have gone up over the last few months, well then, that's something to be aware of. So rather than just getting an upgrade and putting more stuff on, think about what you can get rid of. And take out of the van or the vehicle.
Very good advice there. Very, very good advice. Save the cost of the GVM upgrade. Save the cost of all these extras that most people don't use anyway. They're just carrying them around for show. And save on fuel and just keep them as lean as you can. That's the way they were designed.
Great advice.
Fantastic. Yes. All right, matey, well, before we end this segment on GVM upgrades, I've got to play you a song. You know the drill now. You're a regular on the program. This would be about your ninth week with us on the program. What can I do for you today?
Well, we're always talking about the weight, so why don't we have The Weight by Jimmy Barr?
Great song selection, Jeff. All right, there you go, listeners. GVM upgrades, The Weight. We're going to play for Jeff DF from Check Weight by Jimmy Barnes. And we'll be back with more Raymond Oz straight after that.
I pulled in a Nazareth. I was feeling about a half past dead. I just need a place where I could lay my head. Hey, mister, can you tell me where a man might find a bed? He just grinned and shook my head, and no was all he said. Take a load off.
picked up my bags and went looking for a place to hide. When I saw old Carmen and the devil walking side by side, I said, hey Carmel, come on, let's go downtown. She said, I've got to go, but my friend, he can stick around. Take a load, I've been in. Take a load for free. Take a load, I've been in. Hey, hey, put the load, put right, the load on, right on me. Why don't you go down, Miss Moses? Ain't nothing you can say. It's just old Luke. Luke is waiting on the judgment day. Hey, Luke, my friend, what about young Annalee? Said, do me a favor, boy, won't you stay and keep Annalee company? Take a load off of Annie. Take a load for free. Take a load off of Annie. Just to follow me, and he caught me in the fall. He said, I'll see you right if you take on Jack, my dog. I said, no, wait a minute, Chester, no, I'm a peaceful man. He said, that's okay, just feed him when you can. Take a load off of Bennett. Take a load. Take a load off of Bennett. Hey, put the load right on, right on me. Ooh, ooh, right on me.
Come on, man.
Oh, I catch a cannonball that'll take me down the land. My bag's sinking low. I do believe it's time to get back to Miss Fanny. You know she's the only one who's saved me here. Her regards for everyone. But take a load off Fanny. Take a load for free. Take a load off.
Street Caravans have now moved to a brand new location. 11 Clayton Road, Heatherbrae is where you'll find them. Whether you're looking to sell, trade or upgrade, they'll look after you. Check out their range, Silver Valley, Hurricane, Paramount, Road Trip or their flagship Option RV. They won't be beaten on price, so get yourself a knockout deal today. They're open 6 days a week. Why not give them a call on 02-4987-5288 or check out their website, 7thstreetcaravans.com.au.
Oh, hello, listeners. If you've just joined us, my name's Phil C. This is Roaming Oz, and we are in Whitecliffs chatting with one of the local sort of characters, Mr. Doug Torpy. How you going today, Doug?
Good, mate. Yourself?
Mate, having a fabulous time here in Whitecliffs, and I've got to tell you, we didn't know what to expect when we turned off the road. It's about 100 k's. From Wilcannia to get to here, to Whitecliffs, and it's a pretty unusual place with a lot of special characters just like yourself, my friend. Now, thank you so much for taking some time to chat with us today. Tell us all about what you do here in Whitecliffs.
I'm retired now.
You're retired?
Totally retired.
Yeah, but you've got this sort of hobby of putting railway dogs and turning them into art. Now, railway dogs, listeners, for the benefit of people who don't know what they are, they're the railway pins. What are they used for, the railway pins?
Hold the railway line down.
Hold the railway line down. But what Doug does, listeners, is he's not using them to hold the railway line down. He's using them to create art. Now, you've got these little sculptors out there, and there's about 600 of them, all depicting different things. You've got a guy, for example, who's got a set of skis on. You've got another chap who's holding a fishing rod. And you make all these things out of railway pins or railway dogs. When did you get the idea to do it?
Oh, just come one day. Yeah. Yep. Just put four together and yep. away they go, yeah.
You put four together and...
put a head on it.
And put a head on it and turned it into something.
Something.
You see, I call it art. And to me, it's a sculptor and it's different. It's creative. But you don't seem all that enthused about it, Doug. What do you call it? Just tinkering, just biding your time.
Biding your time.
Okay. What did you do before you came to Whitecliffs?
Mallee Farmer.
Yeah, Mallee Farmer.
South of Mildura.
Okay. Yeah. And how long have you been in Whitecliffs?
23 years.
23 years. There's not a lot of stuff in Whitecliffs, is there? You really got to go to Wilcannia if you want to have some fun. I mean, there's a hotel, there's a takeaway food shop, there's a medical centre, I guess you'd call it that. So there's not a lot to do here other than this tinkering.
And dig holes.
Dig holes. Yeah. Do you do a bit of prospecting, a bit of mining for
used
opal?
To,
or do, yeah. you
used to? Used to.
Yeah. So was it the mining or the opal that sort of got you to here? Or what actually, how did you end up from there to here?
Come up here in the early 60s as a rouseabout in Shearer.
Yep.
I always said I was going to come back.
Yep.
Come back and dug a hole, found a bit of opal.
Yep.
I went Yahoo.
Yep.
And I thought that was a waste of time because you couldn't sell it.
Okay.
And then I bought the local store.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. And then you let the local store go?
Sold
the local store?
Sold it and bought this house here and called it quits.
Called it quits. Yeah. And now you tinker?
I do on the workstations occasionally.
Okay.
Mustering and
all that. Mustering, sort of, yeah. All that, yeah. Yeah. Because really what you do, it's not a business. You don't do it. You don't really do it to make a million bucks. No. You're just doing it for fun and to amuse yourself,
amuse
I suppose.
Yourself. Yeah.
But you do get tourists who come through that want to buy some of your work.
Mm. Yep.
So that makes you a sculptor to me, you know. I don't know what you like to call yourself, Doug. I think you're being a bit modest, mate. Just to let the listeners know, it's only like a $3 donation, really, isn't it, to get in,
it's
to come
much.
And visit. $3.
Probably not even worth $3.
Yeah, very modest. No, it's definitely worth $3, I've got to tell you. And so what got you into it? Was it you just got the four pins one day and thought, I wonder what they'll look like if I put them all together?
Yeah.
And that was it? Yeah,
yep.
Pretty much.
The yard was full of cactuses and peppercorn trees, just a mess out there, so I just cleaned it up. Put some rubbish around.
Yeah. Rubbish. It's not rubbish, listeners, okay? Don't be discouraged by Doug's laid-back attitude. Because you've got a little pathway there that you created that kind of meanders through, and you got some old cars out there. You got a rusty car out there and a burl. Is that a big burl sort of tree root thing?
Yeah.
So it is an interesting thing to look at, some of the things, and walk through the little pathway and have a look at what you've put together. Has anybody ever asked you to put one together especially for them? Has anyone ever said, hey, can you make one of these, whatever?
Yes.
And what was it?
A bloke swimming.
Okay.
But every time she put it in the water, it sank.
Oh, gosh, I hope they didn't put it in the bath and sit on it. That could have been a bit disappointing. So do sometimes people do ask you to make something special for them?
Yep.
Okay. And other than that, you've just come up with the ideas of your own. Because I said you've got one with skis, a bloke on skis. You've got a guy, I think it looks like he's playing a musical instrument. You've got a fella holding a fishing rod. I think you got one out there with an Aboriginal with a spear and a snake. So you've got all these things. You just kind of sit there one day and think, I might just make one of these today.
Today, yep.
Yeah?
That's
so
it.
Whatever pops into your head.
Yep.
How long does it take you to make one of these?
Oh, 2 or 3 hours probably.
Two or three hours? Okay. So do you make them every day or
Do you just...
Depends on my partner. If she gives me the shits, I'll go outside and make one.
So your partner's not here today, obviously, no, so no, you can say that.
Talk about it.
Your partner's gone into Wool Canyon to have a bit of fun with some girlfriends. So what do? For funny? You just go to the local hotel and kick up a bit of dust? Or what do yourself? Or do you go to Wool Canyon if you want to just let your hair down?
We haven't been to the pub since the borough started.
Okay.
We stay away from it.
Yeah.
And about once a month we'll go to Broken Hill.
Okay.
Stay the night.
Yep. Okay.
Wine and dine out.
Okay.
Make out with Flash and come home.
And then come back home.
Yep.
Okay. And do it all again.
Do it all again.
What do you like about White Cliffs? Because all I see, there's a lot of very interesting people here, but there's not much else other than Opals here. It's a dusty town, and you've been here over 20 years. What's the attraction for you for White Cliffs? You just like the laid-back lifestyle?
Laid-back lifestyle.
Yeah. Because I don't even think there's a local copper in White Cliffs, is there?
Thank goodness.
Thank goodness. So who breaks up the brawls, or is it the last man standing? I imagine there'd be a few kicking up the dust every now and then. There's no coppers.
No coppers. We police ourselves.
Yeah. So you sort of just do your own thing. Nobody really disturbs you. It's a town that's pretty much sort of left by itself.
By itself.
Yeah. And you just
do your own thing. That's the beauty of it.
Yeah. And that's the attraction for you.
Yeah.
Yeah. And this house you're living in, this is an interesting looking home. You bought this. What would a house like this cost in White Cliffs, do you think?
This one come up for sale.
Yep.
An old lady had it, Nancy had it.
Mm-hmm.
I knocked on the door and I said, selling the house, Nancy? Yes. She said, I'm going back to New Zealand.
Okay.
And I said, how much you want for it?
Yep.
She said, $40,000.
Yes.
Went and got the chequebook and paid her there and then.
$40,000.
The TV was going, there's the kettles on the boil. She walked out and I walked in.
Wow.
So
$40,000.
$40,000.
Yeah. Which is, you can't even buy a broken down old car for that. But this is quite a nice home you got here for $40,000.
It's solid. Does it still?
Roof doesn't leak.
Oh, how do you know? Well, when it rains.
I don't see any stains on the roof, so I'm assuming it doesn't leak.
It's got its problems, but
yeah,
we're not fussed.
No. Keeps you out of the weather and... Yeah. Yeah, having a good roof over your head for $40,000 sounds good to me.
Yeah, that's
all right, mate. Well, look, I want to let the listeners know you do sell your pieces. I call them sculptors. They're only small. How tall would they be? Their average is about what, a foot, 30 centimeters or something, or because how long's it, the pins? They'd be about.
What? There's different sizes, different shapes, different sizes.
So you don't shape them?
Yeah, hit them with a hammer.
You heat them up first.
No.
Okay.
Just hit them with a hammer.
Bend them.
Weld them together.
Yep.
And probably 7 or 8 inches high, I suppose.
Yeah. So I guess they're about, well, on average, probably 10 to 12 inches. Some of the larger ones
you've got out there.
Some of them, you've got chains on some of them so they can swing in the breeze. I notice there's a witch out there flying on a broom that you can put up and scare something away. The birds coming into your trees. Yeah. Well, it's interesting. I appreciate you taking the time, Doug. I know you're a bit of a quiet person. You don't like to do this sort of thing, so I really do appreciate you taking the time to chat with us.
Thank you.
And I suppose the thing is, listeners, it's an honor system. There's a box at the front gate, $3 to come through and have a look. And if you want to buy something, you ring the bell or knock on the door. Is that the best way?
That's the best way.
Okay, and you'll either be confronted by Doug. He's a big menacing-looking fella, so don't go try and nick one on him because he might hang one on you. And then, of course, you've got your partner and she's twice as bad, apparently. All right, there you go, listeners. I'm going to wind this up now, Doug. Thank you so much for your time, mate. Before I do that, though, Doug, I'm going to play a song for you. What sort of music? You look pretty rough. Do you like the hard rock and roll? You're a country man. What sort of music can I play for you?
Country
music. Yeah. All right, Doug, will you leave it with me? We had a chat before. You haven't got any favourites.
So
we're going to play a special country song for Doug, and we'll be back with more Roman Oz straight after that. Thank you so much for your time, Doug.
Pleasure.
Thank you so much, mate. We'll be right back.
From coast to coast by night and day, hear the clicking of the wheels, the humming of the diesel on her ribbons of steel. Carrying the memories of a nation built by hand, see the Indian Pacific span the land. She's the pride of all the railway men, cross country where she flies, from the blue Pacific waters to where the mountains rise, by lakes and wide brown rivers, through desert country dry, see the Indian Pacific passing by. For the Indian Pacific, she goes a-rolling down the track, 5,000 miles to travel before she's there and back. Beside the line that drove the waves, his battered old gray hat, and kids are catching yabbies down by the river flat. And a woman hangs her washing in a backyard near the line, as the Indian Pacific's rolling by. Hear the whistle blowing lonely neath the Nullarbor starlight, saluting those who walk across the track she rides tonight. Calling to the railway camp and the fettlers on the line, I'm the Indian Pacific right on time. From the silver of the broken hill to old Kalgoorlie gold, she mirrors all the colors of the land so hard and old. Then the western flowers are blooming and the air is just like wine, and the Indian Pacific's making time. For the Indian Pacific, she goes a-rolling down the track, 5,000 miles to travel before she's there and back. From the waters of the western sea to the eastern ocean sand, the Indian Pacific spans the land. Oh, the Indian Pacific spans the land.
We hope you enjoyed the show, listeners.
If you missed any, check out our Facebook page, Spotify, or RomanOz.com.au.
Tune in next week for more
Roman Oz.